to Hoosier Ag This Week, the weekly review of Indiana agriculture. I'm Andy Eubank with Hoosier Ag Today, and I'm joined today by Gary Truitt with his commentary. Eric Pfeiffer is here along with Ashley Davenport and a hot new farm forecast from Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. And there's plenty to get to in farm news, including a cyber attack on a major meat processor, a decline in the new Ag Economy Barometer, an update on how Indiana corn and soybean crops are faring during another challenging spring, and a request for you to do a test of your rural internet speed. We'll start with some very good double exposure for Indiana dairy. The 2021 Indy 500 was frequently referred to last Sunday as the largest spectator event since the start of the pandemic over a year ago. And indeed, it became a much more typical race experience. The fans were thrilled about that race. Racetrack officials and the media were thrilled. And so was the head milk lady, Jill Huyen, of Homestead Dairy in Plymouth, Indiana.
This year, having the opportunity to celebrate with so many people safely, and knowing that Haleo had its fourth win and I got to be a part of it, and the dairy farmers that helped carry on that tradition, it was an amazing and humbling experience.
It was also a unique experience with a massive celebration by four-time winner Elio Castroneves even before arriving at Victory Circle for the roses and bottle of milk. Huyen remained patient and knew he would get to the important post-race traditions.
I knew that he was excited for the milk, but I knew he was over-the-top excited to be celebrating with the fans. Knowing that we're coming back to some normalcy, I think he was just so overly excited. I knew it was going to happen. I knew that moment where I got to experience that tradition of handing off the milk was going to happen. I waited patiently, like I always do. You always have to wait patiently for the things you work hard at. So I knew it was going to happen.
Then in Victory Circle, something else unique happened. A double dip of sorts for American Dairy Association Indiana. Elio came back for more milk, this time mixed with pink powder to mirror his winning car color scheme.
He did, and that is so exciting. Think about this. He knew that the trophy of that ice-cold glass of milk was so important to him, that he wanted to win so bad that he wanted to dye the milk the color of his car to even be more passionate about it. And it was his fourth time. I think I applaud him for knowing how important the tradition of milk was and thinking ahead, wanting to win that trophy.
Check our website to hear more from the excited Indy 500 milk lady. A ransomware attack on JBS is yet another blow for an already struggling cattle industry. With an update, here's Ashley Davenport.
The world's largest meat producer confirmed an attack on Sunday, May 30th, causing all of its U.S. beef plants to shutter on Tuesday. According to Lee Richmond, board member of the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, plants have still been trying to work through the backlog supply from when the pandemic first started.
It's unfortunately becoming a common theme for the beef industry. You know, it all started back up in the Holcomb Fire, shutting down that plant for an extended amount of time. And then we went through the pandemic, and then some of these producers who didn't have stuff locked in with corn that buy corn, that skyrocketed on them. Some of them had to deal with weather, and then we get another event like this week. It just seems like we continually get these events. It seems like every 6 months.
These recurring black swan events have been frustrating to producers who are barely breaking even.
We just assume everything's going to be normal. We're going to have a market for our cattle when it comes time when they're ready. And the unfortunate thing is when these events happen, it seems like the packing industry does even better with them. The gap between what the packers are receiving and what they're paying us is record large. Obviously, producers get hurt when these events happen because we back up supply. We then have to fight for a market to find a shank space to get our cattle slaughtered, so which usually goes to the lowest price. And we have excess supply on our side.
This bottleneck in turn hurts consumers.
They all of a sudden see a lot less tight supply, and then the prices skyrocket up. You were seeing that already even before this event. I mean, outside the pandemic, box beef prices are highest ever.
Four packers control roughly 80% of the market. There's an ongoing investigation by the Department of Justice into the meat packing sector. Richmond says that this latest event highlights what the industry has become and the ramifications.
Obviously, if we had more companies that owned the plants, this might only affect 3% of the market or 5% of the market rather than 20, 25% of the market. I mean, our government needs to look at this and figure out what to do going forward.
I'm Ashley Davenport.
All right, Ashley, thank you. The U.S. Census Bureau recently released new data for the first 4 months of 2021 regarding trade with China. Data shows China is closing the gap in their purchase goal in the Phase 1 trade agreement. American Farm Bureau Federation economist Veronica Nye has some results.
The data recently released for April 2021 shows us that while China is behind on their imports relative to the commitment that they have for 2021, purchases are really coming on strong. We're looking right now at exports over $10 billion, achieving about 25% of the goal for 2021, which is $40
billion. Nye says China is on track to be the largest purchaser of U.S. ag products.
Last year, China had pledged to purchase $33 billion in ag products, and they didn't quite make it. They purchased $27 billion. But still, that was a record for U.S. ag exports. So looking at 2021 with a commitment of $40 billion, that's a huge increase in exports for U.S. ag products and would certainly secure China as the largest export destination for U.S. ag products once again.
She adds, reaching the lofty goals of the Phase 1 agreement is still possible.
Looking at current commodity prices and the purchase commitments for new crop commodities and how much further along in exports we are in 2021 relative to where we were in 2020, it seems China might actually make it this year. At least they stand a chance that U.S. ag exports might actually achieve this huge goal that was laid out in the Phase 1 agreement.
Veronica Nye at Farm Bureau. Learn more on the Market Intel page at fb.org. Now we shift over to a look at the markets, ending the week strong, but it was an up-and-down week with a sell-off on Thursday and then that Friday comeback. We have numbers coming up as far as how we did close the week. First, though, market analysis with Bob Utterback of Utterback Marketing Services. I spoke with him in the middle of Friday trade.
We're ending the week with an aggressive move. We came back, you know, frankly, when we come back from holidays, I thought the market would be a little softer, but it came back with a vengeance. And I think it basically is related to the crop condition ratings. This week came out above expectation, but the frost that hit in the northern corn belt, plus the change in the weather models, plus the no cancellation by the Chinese of any substance, has left the market, and the funds really have increased their long position, has left the market to have a strong recovery. One of the confusing things about the market is there are underlying things that help give you guidance. One is the basis is the cash market. Strong, and the cash market has actually weakened with this board rally, which is an anxiety for me. That means the cash market has maybe overbought and got what is needed, and the board's rally is not justified by the cash. That's one concern I have.
That is Bob Utterback at Utterback Marketing Services, 800-832-1488. Now the final numbers. First in the corn market, a strong move on Friday. July settles at 682 and three quarters, up 20 and three quarters. September 606 and a half, up 24 and a quarter. And Dease corn, a 25-cent pickup, 591 and a half. Beans even better than that. July, 1583 and three quarters, up 34 and a half. August up 33 and a quarter. And Novi beans, 1435 and a half, up 32 cents. Also Chicago wheat, strong over a dime up. July, 687 and three quarters, up 11 and a half. It was mixed in livestock with August live cattle, 118.07, losing 45 cents, but up $1.60 on the July lean hogs, 120.60. You are up to date now on the markets. I'm Ian DeEubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
For nearly a century, your local farmer-owned cooperative has served this community by delivering outstanding customer service, industry expertise, quality products, and leading-edge technology to our agriculture and energy partners. Today, we're committed to cultivating success in the communities we call home by providing America's farmers with the supplies and outstanding service they need to do their part to feed the world. Agronomy, liquid fuels, home heat, grain marketing, animal nutrition, feed, and more. Co-Alliance, your local farmer-owned cooperative, continues to be your resource for whatever the day, month, or season brings your way.
A dry, warm weekend is in store. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook, brought to you by Seed Genetics Direct, the largest Ohio-based independent seed company and the Eastern Corn Belt's fastest-growing independent seed company. Visit SeedGeneticsDirect.com for more information. Sunshine, blue sky, warm temperatures for your weekend, Saturday and Sunday both, featuring temperatures above normal and excellent evaporation and dry down. Now, with heat and moving into summer, we generally expect a little bit more in the way of convective activity, some heat-based instability. And Mother Nature does not disappoint this week coming up. We added thunderstorm potential to the forecast for Monday in our forecasts later on in the week. I don't think we should completely rule out some pop-up showers and thunderstorms as we approach sunset or get into the evening hours. Even tomorrow night, Sunday night, in southern Indiana. I think mostly U.S. 50 southward, but I'm not going to get too cute there. So just keep an eye out. And then as we move through this entire week coming up, Monday through Friday, I think the warm air that's around daily is going to give us an opportunity to see pop-up showers and thunderstorms. I'm going to have that in my forecast every day, Monday through Friday. I don't think we see any better than about 60% coverage for any day this week. I thought maybe we'd see better coverage late in the week, but I'm not going to get cute with that either right now. 60% coverage any day. Most of the rain when it falls is talking about anywhere from a tenth to four-tenths of an inch on the top end, and it will generally be the lower half of the range. I will say late in the week, particularly Thursday, Friday, we do see slightly higher potential for strong to severe weather down near the Ohio River, some of those southern tier counties. But this moisture is going to be very hit and miss. Yes, 60% coverage, which means a large part of the state could be just missing out on it completely as we move through. So don't count on moisture, but I think if you go looking at it full bore, the five-day period from Monday through Friday, I think we end up with coverage around 80 to 90% with moisture totals half to maybe as much as 1 inch for some of you that get multiple rain events. So yes, definitely rain around, and it's going to be needed rain with temperatures above normal. Seeing a front come up from the southwest early next week on the 14th, that could give us a chance for some showers, quarter to three quarters of an inch across 80% of the state there. Timing, though, is still a little bit uncertain. And then as we move through the extended 11 to 16 day forecast outlook, we'll kind of quickly take a look here. It looks pretty dry to me. The week of the 14th, I don't see a large-scale batch of moisture coming together. What I do see is some heat, well above normal temperatures all week. Could see a front coming through late week, Thursday into Friday, but it has minor moisture available with it. That's a look at your forecast update. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Bain Welker Equipment and Case IH know the health and protection of every seed and plant contributes to your bottom line. That's why we've added Case IH sprayers at all our dealerships. Designed with versatility in mind, Case IH Trident and Patriot sprayers are engineered to allow time to work for you. Get in the field earlier, cover more acres, and get more done in a short amount of time. See which sprayer is right for you. Stop in or visit bain-welker.com. Bain Welker Equipment, employee-owned, customer-focused.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Commentary with Gary Truitt is coming up this segment. But first, last week, Indiana Farm Bureau announced the launch of the Indiana Speed Test, a crowdsourced internet speed test that focuses on enabling cost-effective planning and deployment of broadband. This is similar to other speed tests you've performed from your cell phone or computer. But this test will take data and put it in the hands of decision makers who are looking to build out broadband services to unserved or underserved areas. All Hoosiers are encouraged to take the test. Katrina Hall, INFB's Senior Director of Public Policy Strategy and Advocacy, says the speed test is safe and won't collect personal data.
It does ask your address, but that is converted to a GIS location, and your address isn't stored. There's no other personal information, and certainly nothing that you do not agree to as you go onto the speed test. It's really pretty quick. It takes about a minute, and we encourage people to take this on the device that you use at home. Certainly that could be your cell phone, but test it on your computer.
Hall says Indiana Farm Bureau is calling on all rural Hoosiers to take the test, but to also communicate with local officials how much they rely on quality internet service.
They need to know that you rely on it, not just for virtual learning or for watching Netflix. It's an important part of agriculture going forward for precision agriculture, as well as just opportunities for e-commerce and the things that you do at your place. So tell your own story.
The Indiana Speed Test can be found at infb.org/speedtest. You can find a link at HoosierAgToday.com. Last week, the Federal Trade Commission filed a complaint against Frontier Communications. The complaint alleges Frontier did not provide many consumers with internet service at the promised speeds and charged many for more expensive and higher speed service than Frontier provided. Representative Ron Kind, a Democrat from Wisconsin, says the problem isn't just in his state, it's also in states like Indiana.
We've known you've had a problem with Frontier for some time. I had a community meeting a little over a year ago, just before the pandemic hit, where I took a lot of complaints from people who had Frontier service and how bad they were administering it, how expensive it was, and just how shoddy the service was. But I'd also say this isn't limited just to the Frontier. This is other service providers doing the same thing. They come into a community with these grand promises. They don't deliver. They take the money. It's another reason we need a comprehensive broadband plan for America that works.
The complaint was filed with the attorneys general from Indiana, Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan, and North Carolina.
Certainly with the case now, trying to refund customers' money is the ultimate goal, what the attorney generals have applied for. But we need better monitoring and oversight, especially for these bigger providers that just got awarded some big federal contracts for a rural broadband expansion, to make sure that they're adhering to the terms of the contract and not just taking the money and run. And that's another problem that we have to confront.
Kind is a member of the National Rural Broadband Task Force. The panel is working to improve broadband speeds in rural areas.
This is the Weekend Commentary with Hoosier Ag Today's Gary Truitt.
Plant-based meats are everywhere, and they are currently the darling of the food industry. Along with all the hype, though, comes a lot of misinformation, accusations, and a bunch of downright lies. The two biggest of these are that plant-based meats are healthier and better for the environment. In both cases, the facts don't support those claims. At the same time, the one plant-based farm product that can prove it is better for human health and better for the environment is criticized by the same crowd that supports plant-based meat. While in a few key areas, plant-based meats have some impressive health claims, such as lower in fat and cholesterol, but they are highly processed and have almost three times the sodium level as beef, which has led to mixed opinions among dietitians as to whether plant-based meats are really healthier or not. The environmental claims by plant-based meat proponents are just downright silly. Animal agriculture in general has been coming under criticism by a variety of environmentalists and Hollywood celebrities, criticizing meat production from cow flatulence to carbon footprints to claims made against animal agriculture to a host of other claims made about animal agriculture, most of which are not accurate. These outrageous and unsubstantiated claims are all part of the marketing approach for plant-based meats. They are a distraction because, let's face it, plant-based meats cannot compete with real meat when it comes to taste and texture. So making us feel good about eating plant-based meats distracts us from something that, well, maybe doesn't taste that good. Yet it is the belief that eating meat is somehow bad for the environment that is encouraging a lot of younger consumers to adopt plant-based diets. Yet this eco-aware generation seems to be apathetic about adopting a plant-based fuel to put in their cars. Ethanol not only puts less harmful particulate matter into the air, it comes from a renewable plant-based resource that takes millions of tons of carbon out of the atmosphere and sequesters it in the ground. So why the double standard? Perhaps we should start marketing ethanol-blended fuel as plant-based fuel, or perhaps even eco-friendly plant-based fuel. This is a claim that even the electric cars can't make, since their batteries are full of toxic chemicals and heavy metals. When it comes down to it, almost everything that farmers produce is plant-based. All of our meat starts out as plants, and then we just run these plants through animals to get great-tasting protein. Wool, cotton, suede, leather, and other fibers have plants as their raw materials. Plants are also the basis for fuels, as well as a host of other consumer products and industrial materials. And we do it all by being sustainable and environmentally responsible. Plant-based products made in a lab are no better or no worse than what we produce on the farm. So let's drop the double standard when it comes to plant-based meat. I'm Gary Truitt.
All right, Gary, thanks. There's still more to come here on The Weekend Show. Stick around. You're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today.
Just in time for National Dairy Month this June, American Dairy Association Indiana is proud to announce the Indiana Cheese Trail, opening June 10th. Indiana is home to 10 cheese-making locations, many producing award-winning cheeses, Colby, Cheddar, Monterey Jack, and more. Learn about the Indiana Cheese Trail at IndianaCheeseTrail.com. Log on and check out the cheese and support Indiana's cheesemakers. Brought to you by American Dairy Association Indiana and WinnersDrinkMilk.com.
Mark your calendar for December 14 through 16 to attend the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo. Hey, it may be the first indoor farm show you get to attend in 2021. Exhibitors, space reservations are now open, so get your contracted details at IndianaFarmExpo.com. And remember, the show has a new location, the Grand Park facility in Westfield, Indiana. The Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, December 14 through 16.
This is Hoosier Ag This Week. Welcome back. I'm Andy Eubank. Belsham is relatively new in the United States, but it's a company with a long history of crop protection. Eric Pfeiffer checks in with some details.
The Belgian-based company has been in business for 34 years and in the U.S. since 2018. This year, Belsham has launched a new corn herbicide called Tough 5EC. Belsham General Manager Tom Wood.
It's a broadleaf herbicide, and it goes quite well into the current integrated weed management programs used in corn. So what we're seeing is that when you add Tough to your tank, we've seen anywhere from 5% to 30% improvement in control. And it really performs well. And I say it always shines when resistant weeds are present.
Wood explains how Tough 5EC works.
The AI associated with Tough is Pyridate. It's not new chemistry, but it's a chemistry whose time has come, and it works. We say it synergizes with HPPD, and synergizes on a scientific level. So the Pyridate essentially increases free radicals that disrupt cell membranes that kill plants, and the HPPDs reduces the ability of these of the plant to defend itself against free radicals. So it's a nice 1-2 punch, and there's the synergy.
Wood says pairing Tough 5EC with atrazine gives it an effective and speedy killing capability of tough broadleaf weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth.
Tough is a foliar application, absorbs very fast into the leaves. Atrazine, while also being foliar, works mostly through the roots and slower. So you get a nice combination with atrazine also.
Learn more about Tough 5EC at BelshamUSA.com. You can find a link at HoosierAgToday.com.
In the first of our series of growing season reports with specialty hybrids, technical agronomist Tom Manny steps through the spring planting season. In Indiana, 94% of corn is planted and soybeans are 86% planted. Both planting and emergence are ahead of last year and the five-year average. Manny says it hasn't been a perfect spring,
which is unfortunate, but it should also leave growers with some optimism. A lot of the crop still looks good despite the temperature issues that we've had. It still looks very healthy. There's a bit of resiliency to the crop, which is great, and that's really something that you're going to see growing through our germplasm within specialty.
Forecasts are turning hot and dry, an important turn for crop development, although Manny would still like to see more moisture.
We are still below average in terms of rainfall, so we definitely need some soil moisture at this point. Heat-wise, at this point, we can't get enough. We need warm temperatures. We need these GDUs to help advance the crop and get it caught up to where it really should be by this point, especially considering as long as some of this crop has been in the ground. So we're looking at 2 months in some areas, and this corn is V5, V6, and that's just a subject to the lack of heat that we've had over the past 2 months. So it really needs to be moving along faster than it is.
But 90-degree weather coming could get crops off to the races. Manny says silver leaf symptom is appearing in corn due to the clear, calm, and cool nights this spring. And he says be looking for seedling blights that could cause some stunted growth. More at HoosierAgToday.com. Back in mid-May, agricultural producers weren't in the best frame of mind. From the 10th to the 14th, 400 U.S. producers were surveyed for the Ag Economy Barometer, and their responses led to a 20-point decline in the May barometer to an 8-month low of 158. Purdue University and CME Group create the regular update, and Purdue's Jim Mintert says that taxes are a driver of this decline.
There are a number of tax policy changes under consideration in Washington, and so we continue to ask farmers their perspective on tax policy, especially with respect to the impact it might have on estate taxes and their ability to pass farms on to the next generation of farmers and their family. Overwhelmingly, farmers are telling us that they're very concerned about changes in tax policy, making it more difficult to pass their farm on to the next generation of farmers and their family.
The report says producers were less optimistic about both current conditions and the future of the agricultural economy as both the index of current conditions and index of future expectations fell. There was also a 10-point drop in the Farm Capital Investment Index for a couple of reasons, Mintert says.
There was an increase in the number of farmers who said that they planned to reduce their farm machinery purchases in May versus April. And as you look at a new question this month, we asked people, what are their plans for constructing new farm buildings and or grain bins in the upcoming year? And 59% of the producers in the survey said they plan to reduce their purchases and construction of new farm buildings and grain bins.
He added rising construction costs are likely a contributing factor to weaker construction plans. Rising input costs, and some are rising significantly, are also driving the overall barometer lower. Mintert is the barometer's principal investigator and director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. And that's a wrap on this weekend's Hoosier Ag This Week. For Gary Truitt, Eric Pfeiffer, Ashley Davenport, Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin as well, I'm Andy Eubank. Have a great weekend. This is Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most listened to farm radio network.